Hello, this is Irony Singleton, a.k.a. T-Dog from The Walking Dead, and you are listening to The Walking Dead Underground.
Now your hosts, Cynic, Igri, and Ryan.
And you are listening to the Walking Dead Underground podcast, and I'm your host, Cynic. And joining me, as always, my co-host and voted most likely to podcast in their senior yearbooks, Igri and Ryan. On this week's show, in a world full of negativity, I get to sit down with one of the most interesting and uplifting people I've ever had a chance of meeting. Mr. Iron E. Singleton joins us as we talk about his Blindsided by the Walking Dead project. We also get to review episode 3 of The Walking Dead entitled Monsters. We want to thank you all for your continued support. Like, listen, subscribe. Most importantly, enjoy the show. I'm here with the star of stage and big screen and now small, and one of the most uplifting people I've ever had the pleasure to meet. Mr. Iron E. Singleton joins us. Mr. Singleton, welcome to the program.
Wow. Thank you so much, Brother McCain. That's quite an introduction. I appreciate it.
You're coming off an epic Walker Stalker weekend and episode premiere, which you took part of. It's been almost 4 seasons since T-Dog has left us. What makes the fans still fully Team T-Dog?
Man, that is really interesting. I think one person, I've had one of a few people to tell me that, you know, people love T-Dog, but additionally, it's, I guess, the type of energy I give to other individuals. And I try to live my life steeped in truth and love, and that's what I'm about. I feel like that's the reason why I'm still alive, because that's what the higher power, the supreme source, told me I was here for. And so I try to just live my life every day practicing that, and somebody kind of compliment, like you did, you said that I'm uplifting or whatever, and that's what I live my life for. I try to be as uplifting as I possibly can. So it may be a combination of maybe the character T-Dog and me just wanting to love every single individual that I come into contact with.
That makes perfect sense. What do you think it is about The Walking Dead that breeds such unabashed loyalty from the fans?
It's, I think that it's a combination of the chemistry between the cast mates. I think it's the Walker Stalker Con, which you told me you just left. And generally, it's unfortunate what you told me about that experience that you had. But for the most part, all the castmates, my castmates, the ones that I work with, are really kind, very humble, very respectful, and grateful individuals. And I think that when people come out to the Walker Stalker Con, they experience that, and that makes them love the show more. But the thing that kind of pulled them into the show was probably the connection that we as human beings have to that type of existence, that type of world. The way we live now, the world we live in now, it's somewhat of a lesser, like the apocalypse is more extreme. It's how we as human beings handle situations, how we perform under duress, when it seems like all hell has broken loose. What would we do? And people ask themselves that question. How would I respond? Would I respond like Rick? Would I respond like T-Dog? Would I respond like Daryl or Carol? So I think that's part of the allure.
Yeah, putting yourself in the place of the characters. I mean, it's an everyman's story, right? I mean, this could happen to any of us. And, you know, do you go the good guy route? Do you go the bad guy route? You know, do you save people? Do you take from others? It really does ring true with everybody. And going back to Walker Stalker, I got to watch it at work. I was fortunate enough to gain Platinum Access, so I kind of sped through the line, so it gave me a lot of time to people watch. And I do that a lot when I'm standing in line to talk to people as well. And I'll tell you, man, there wasn't a person that left your booth that didn't have a smile on their face. So everything you're saying definitely rings true. What's your favorite part about these type of events?
It's exactly what you said. I'm able to put a smile on their faces just like they're able to put a smile on mine. It's a refueling. It's an exhilarating feeling. It's like it reaffirms my belief system. It reaffirms why I'm here, and it's for us to give each other love. It's for us to make the world a better place. Otherwise, I would not want to be here. Given my experiences and given the epiphany that I had, the major epiphany I had when I lost my mother, I didn't want to be here, and God told me what my purpose was for. And God said, well, in addition to giving your mother's life meaning, you're here to be as kind as you can to just everybody you meet. No matter who it is, no matter what type of negative energy you give them, you change them through love. You give them positive energy. You counter hate with love. And so when I come out to the, when I go out to the conventions, that's exactly what I receive from people and I give them return. It's a reciprocal relationship. It's karma. What we put in the world, we get back. So that's what I really enjoy about the conventions. It's like a way to minister, and people minister to me through their testimonies, just like I try my best to do the same with them through my offering my testimony.
And I saw that the second time that I encountered you. I was standing in line to talk to Jeffrey DeMunn, and you showed up, and you didn't even put your stuff down, and you walked over to Jeffrey, and you walked over to Scott, and gave love the second you got there, showing respect to the older statesmen of the show. Is the cast itself just one big happy family?
I can speak for the cast that I work with from seasons one through early on in three, because I got to know them personally, and I've gotten to know the other castmates personally as well since being on the circuit, the Walker Stalker circuit, and they seem to be really kind and congenial human beings. So I've developed an admiration and appreciation for them as well. But Jeffrey DeMunn and Scott Wilson, I love them dearly, and I even described Jeffrey DeMunn early on as in an ideal world as the father I would have had. And Scott is this and both of them are full of wisdom, so you have to pay homage where it's due. Definitely.
Putting T-Dog into today's society, or say season 7 and season 8, before it was either Rick or Fly Solo. Now we have the world of The Walking Dead has grown by many, many communities. Where would you see T-Dog in today's settings? Which community would he hang his hat?
Oh, he'd still be with Rick. And, you know, because he had his loyalty is to Rick because they started together, and he trusts Rick, even though, like earlier, you touched on human beings trying to figure out how they were going to, I guess make their way through an apocalyptic world. Are they going to be good? Are they going to be bad? Or are they? And I thought, like, would they be more like Rick? Which most of us are kind of like that. You know, we're just kind of walking that middle path to where certain days we have our bad days, and then most days we have our good days. And then very rarely we might have a bad day here and there. But I think that's what life has a tendency of doing to us. It takes its toll sometimes when we have bad things that happen to us. But just like Rick has always been able to bounce back. And that's something that T-Dog respects about Rick. And he would have been Team Rick all the way.
Well, let's take a second to talk about Blindsided by The Walking Dead, which was a wildly successful book and turned into an amazing, entertaining one-man show. What was your inspiration for taking on such a unique and uplifting project?
My existence, again, going back to me wanting to bring meaning to my mother's life, who died at the age of 36. When I was 18 years old, she died from HIV complications. And she was an alcoholic, and she was addicted to crack. And when I had my epiphany, when I got the news that she had died, that she had passed, I found myself on my knees and crying and not wanting to be here anymore. And that's when God told me that my presence, my existence meant something. And God created me for a reason. And in addition to bringing meaning to my mother's life, who had me, so when people see me being the best that I can be, they can say, wow, that's Kat's son. Kat is also Catherine, but I call my mother Kat. And then I can take pride in that. And at the same time, touching people with my testimony is what inspired me to write the book, and also to create the one-man show. So because the show is not only inspirational, motivational, but it's uplifting, it's empowering. It's a huge ball of positivity and understanding for everybody, to get us to understand that we're all interconnected, that we are all one. And it's full of entertainment, though. So first and foremost, as an actor, I have to entertain. And then when I'm able to entertain and impart a really great message on top of it, life doesn't get any better than that. That's most fulfilling to me.
At the end of the day, we're all just trying to make mom proud, right?
Yes. At the end of the day, that's it. And Even my father, speaking of Pop, which I had limited interactions with him as a child. I saw him 2 times in my life. But one thing he told me, McCain, I was around, I guess, 6. It was my first time meeting him. I think he had just gotten out of prison. And he came by, he picked me up and took me to a family reunion on his side. And we went to a store. He went and got me some junk food or something. And he bought me a toothbrush also. And he said, whatever you do, always take care of your teeth. And that stuck with me. So in the back of my mind, I always wanted to be an actor. But at the same time, I was like, okay, if the acting thing doesn't work out, maybe being a dentist is a possibility. And I think a lot of that had to do with what my father told me at such a very young age. So, yeah, we definitely admire our parents, and we want them to be proud of us no matter what.
The book Blindsided by the Walking Dead can be found on Amazon and your website, ironesingleton.com. We can also find out about the show and the Kickstarter movement that you've started for it. In a world full of cynics, Irony Singleton is proving them all wrong. Sometimes a nice guy does finish first. Thank you for being on the show, sir.
Wow, thank you. That's very, very touching, McCain. I appreciate that, and I love you, and I wish you all the best, and everybody else. Let's just continue to love each other. It's free. It doesn't cost a thing. So thank you.
We start the episode with King Ezekiel giving a pep talk to the troops. I'm binding to a hope, my heart perhaps unwisely, but we've come this far. All of us, and we're all still here. If you follow this plan, if you keep to your training, if the fates continue to shine deeply upon us, allowing us this dream, we will not lose one of our ranks. When we last left them, it looked like our favorite party of LARPers was headed headlong into a trap. Ryan, did it surprise you that Team Shiva actually did have some sort of a strategy going into this?
It didn't surprise me that they had a strategy. I think, you know, while it seemed pretty obvious that it was a trap, I think that they wouldn't go into it completely blindly. So I did figure that, you know, there was some kind of a plan. However, my issue was kind of constantly mentioning and then referring back to, you know, not losing a single person. To me, seemed like some scary foreshadowing. So I didn't have high hopes for how this plan would end. But, you know, I wasn't surprised when I saw that they did seem to have a pretty well thought out plan of attack.
It seemed like they were in trouble a few times, and it was just weird how they did it, but it was like, you know, we're going to put out bait for an ambush. And I did like how they were doing that, and it just, again, just like last week, seems like they're like some really, really well-trained military team, just moving around. They don't expend a lot of extra ammo, but how long can it last? I mean, really, when you're only running into savior groups, and we've seen how big the saviors are, when you're only running into like 5-10 guys at a time, where are the rest of them? I mean, that would, if I were leading, that would bring me pause. I'd be like, all right, where is everybody? Why are we running into these small ones? That to me would speak trap.
They get surrounded, right? I mean, at least we think they get surrounded, but then half of them are hiding in the bushes. They pop up, the other half drop to their knees, and they just line them all up like shooting, you know, whatever you want in a barrel, and not one person from the kingdom gets shot. And it was a flawless victory, but was it a little too flawless? I mean, not one savior bullet finding its mark. Was it a little too clean, a little too convenient?
Yeah, that just does not seem like the way things would work. I mean, they're not going to even fire one, and even into the ground anywhere else. It is too clean. And when we're saying all-out war, I mean, the part of me really actually wants to see the war. And you can't have a war without losing some of your own. Now, I know that we've lost some in some of the other places, but right now the kingdom just seems like they're living on luck, and luck is always going to give out at some point.
We jump to Rick and Morales' hometown family reunion, already in progress, and Morales reveals Negan doesn't want Rick, the widow, or the king killed. As soon as I saw you, I knew you made the same trip as me, from there to here. Well, I guess we aren't the same guys we used to be, huh? Ryan, what do you think of this plan for the coalition leadership? If they get caught, is it batter up? Is it easy street torture? Is he going to hold them hostage Game of Thrones style to make sure all the rebels behave? Or what do you think Negan has in mind for the widow, the king, and Rick?
You know, that's a great question, actually. My initial thought was torture. You know, we saw that Negan had multiple opportunities to kill Rick and in a way sever the head of that snake, and he didn't because he wanted to torture him mentally. So my thought initially goes to torture, or goes to some kind of psychological / physical torture, because, you know, otherwise, again, if he wanted to really, you know, screw over Alexandria and this whole team, you know, kill Rick, you know, Rick is the leader, kill Maggie's, you know, is a leader. So, you know, get rid of Ezekiel. Well, I mean, I guess he didn't really torture Ezekiel, but you get the point. I think he's someone who's fond of torture. And I think that would be the purpose of you know, keeping those three.
IG, you're Negan. What's your play?
See, and I agree the torture, but then I kind of go back to Game of Thrones that way, where it'd be torture and then heads on a stick so that everybody knows, don't mess with me. So obviously the torture that has happened thus far with Rick didn't dissuade people enough from continuing to rise up against me. So we need to publicly torture, lop off the head, put it on a pike. You're going to have to one up your game at this point if I'm Negan.
See, I think Negan is more deeper and darker and more methodical in the way he does things. I think you're locked in a dungeon, and I think he's going to try to break you down, and then he'll send you back to your people. You know, well, obviously Gregory got there pre-broken, but he's going to send you back to your people Gregory style with, you know, we really shouldn't fight these guys. They're in charge. Let's leave things the way they are. I think killing them would be too easy. I mean, he could have killed Rick at the first meeting. As soon as he realized, hey, you're Rick, you're the guy in charge, Rick fell from contention of being Lucille'd. You know, he wants to break the leadership. Killing him just makes him a martyr in Negan's eyes. So I think he would much rather break him down over time and switch him to Team Negan. I mean, we watched him try to do it with Sasha. He wanted to do it with Daryl. I think it's the enjoyment comes more out of inflicting his will on somebody, especially if it could be Maggie, because he's already said that he was, you know, kind of interested in her in a way. IG, we move onward from here, and Shiva agrees. Is it possible not to have a death in your future? I mean, if you have yes in your heart, what happens to the morale of the unit when they finally start losing people?
I think the morale is going to suffer deeply because of the amount of stock he's placed into not one lost. He's put so much into that when you lose more than one, it becomes really problematic. And there's no way he's not going to lose more than one ever, right? It's just not going to happen. And it's going to be people that matter. It's going to be, even if it's just like squad leaders, basically, you know, people that are in charge of a smaller team, you're going to lose people that matter. And because of the mantra that just kept going and going, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt really bad.
Ryan, what do you think? I mean, you wrap yourself in this bulletproof cloak of not one person's lost, and then suddenly 2, 3, 5 people start falling over. What happens to the whole team spirit at that point?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think sometimes it's kind of short-sighted to have that mantra because it only works so long. And it's a little bizarre because they are outmatched or outnumbered. So they're going to take losses. I mean, it's just anyone can see that. And so I'm not quite sure what the angle is, if it's to keep them motivated. You know, the only thing I can think of in a positive light is that they have an objective and he needs to keep them motivated and, you know, kind of encouraged to fight on to get to that objective, to get to that building. And maybe, you know, he realizes that there'll be casualties, but whatever he's got to say in the moment to achieve that objective, you know, will work until it doesn't. And then just hope that, you know, when they do start losing people, that, you know, adrenaline and kind of force of will takes over and they're not thinking, oh, wow, we lost people, this sucks, and, you know, sulk away. So, yeah, I mean, I think the only thing I can think is that he has an objective and he needs to get him there. Otherwise, it doesn't really make sense as a mantra, because they're going to lose people. And then what do you do when you lose people? Not 10, not 20. Like, what, you know, how do you start changing it? I don't quite understand where he goes from there.
That being said, even though he speaks like a dungeon master who's really good at it, I would follow King Ezekiel into the hot gates of hell. The way that he leads people is really inspiring. So while morale may drop and drop significantly, if he can keep himself motivated enough to lead his people the way he's been leading even half as much thus far, they still have a chance. because he's still a very, very effective leader. I mean, he's basically the verbal equivalent of Chuck Norris. I mean, he can do whatever he wants as long as he can talk his way through it, because he's just that motivating.
But here's the problem, though. Is he motivating the troops, or is he motivating himself? You know, I was actually looking up the Dooku quote, double the pride, twice the fall. All right, so we're talking about the morale of the troops when somebody, when people start falling over dead. What happens to the morale of Ezekiel? Because I think that he may be buying into his own hype at this point, and it could be really problematic when he does see somebody, especially some, you know, what happens to Ezekiel if, you know, Carol catches a stray, you know, or Jerry or Shiva, you know, I mean, does he completely fall apart? Does this facade that he's wrapped himself in, you know, go away, or does he continue to fight on? Because then if he does, if he maintains and he keeps going, then I would follow him into the gates of hell. But until I can see that for sure, until I can see, I mean, Rick has lost people right in front of him and he's kept going. I haven't seen that at Ezekiel yet, so I'm a little worried about that. I hope it's right. I hope we're right on the mark and he does keep going and he does prevail, but I'm a little worried about that.
Now, do you think it's going to make any difference if it is one of those, like you said, Carol or Jerry or Shiva? Do you think which one of those might make a difference? Because I honestly think that, like, Carol, I think he could get past. Jerry would be a little tough, but I think if Shiva got killed, that in the moment would destroy him even further. I think that would be a bigger problem, just because, like, all this started for King Ezekiel with Shiva.
Well, yeah, that's wrapped into a large part of his identity, right? I mean, Ryan, what do you think? Which one would be more detrimental to his efforts?
I think at this stage it would definitely be Shiva. I think that Shiva is a part of him and part of his identity and part of his character. And I think he loses a lot more at this stage, you know, with Shiva. So I definitely think that that would be the most traumatic for him. You know, I think the big question I have with Ezekiel is, you know, how many battles has he really been through? Like, what has he gone through? And, you know, and it because it appears like he hasn't gone through much, or he hasn't, or, you know, he, or maybe he's been through a lot and he realizes that this shtick works, and even, you know, in the worst of situations, like, this can keep people motivated and keep people inspired, because he is an inspiring character, and he is somebody who I would follow, you know. And you know, he could give a great speech, you know, after losing, you know, everybody, and I'd still want to follow him because he is that charismatic. But then again, the question is, like, how much of this is him being calculating, and how much of this is the act? You know, how much of this is based on experience? How much of it is not? These are really interesting questions that I have, and I hope we get to find out some of this and get a little bit deeper into his character.
Eric is shot, and for all intents and purposes, it doesn't look good. I mean, the bullet has gone right through and out the back. There doesn't seem to be medical attention anywhere close. And Ryan, maybe it's me, maybe it's just my never-ending road trip, but in Aaron's pain, did Eric finally become relevant? And I mean, at this point, he is the background actor of background actors.
Yeah, I think this is the first time you really, he's been around for a while, and I think he's definitely been like a tertiary character. And I think this was, you know, I think he's definitely risen a little bit in prominence over the last season, but I think this was an important moment for him, and I think a moment where maybe he does go to the, you know, B level, or clearly in the B level, and even climbing up to A level, because I think we all expect that we're going to lose some characters this year, and some major characters. So I guess, you know, this is his chance to step up, and possibly, if he's not one of the ones that we lose, we do gain an A level character who has some built in, you know, kind of pathos and some built in sympathy from us as a character.
Aguardo from Helltop disagrees. Terra disagrees. Morgan is a firm no. IG, yet we're still following Jesus' illogical plan of, let's bring these killers home because I'm sure they'll behave. Does it make any sense to you?
No. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what the long game is. I don't know what the short game is. Okay, you know, we've got these guys. What's the plan? Okay, I understand that you don't just start shooting people that have surrendered. I get that. I mean, maybe he's a believer in the Geneva Convention and you have to care for prisoners. Whatever. But you got to have a plan. And there's no plan. It's just, well, we'll just take them back. And then what, buddy? Do what? Because it really, that part bothers me so much, because he's just doing it to do it. And I just don't see anything good coming of it, like at any point.
Ryan, I mean, you've got Morgan, who's at this point, the world's largest expert in restraint, telling you this is a really bad idea. But Jesus just keeps whistling along a happy tune and chugging up the street. I mean, is the moral high ground really worth all this?
No, none of this really doesn't make any sense. I hope it's not simply kind of a chance to create tension between within the group, but it really doesn't make sense. I mean, this is a war, and you know, nobody thinks that they're gonna, you know, the captured saviors are just gonna kind of switch sides. So why take them? They're just gonna be they're gonna take resources, and yeah, it sucks. You don't want to just murder them, but you know, what choice do they have? You know, and I don't think it's the best choice in the world. And it doesn't, in this setting, again, you know, in a war where you have really limited resources, it doesn't make sense to take them.
Morales claims, if you have to be something, you might as well be Negan to survive. IG, I ran a poll earlier this week on Instagram, and people overwhelmingly chose season one Rick to present day Rick. Do you think Officer Friendly is, in fact, dead? And is that a good thing?
I think Officer Friendly is, but I think we've been replaced with Officer Effective. He's still friendly when it's right and when it's among people that he cares about or have proven themselves. But more often than not, he's Officer Effective. It's about what is going to get the accomplished goal. I don't know why people would prefer season one Rick over season seven, late season seven Rick, because you know he's come so far, he's done so many things that I can't look any other way. I mean, season one Rick was intriguing and it was interesting to watch everything happen and watch him get into this world, especially since he had a late start from everybody else. But where we're at, you know, it's important to know that he's gone through everything that he needs to get, because he's had his no fucks given Rick moments, and he's had his I'm going to bite people myself Rick moments, and we've come through all that and come up with something even more original and effective, which is, you know, he's not just the solo leader. He's got a team. He's got other people that he trusts and confides in. I don't know why they would want the original Rick versus Rick, what I guess would probably be now 4.0.
How about you, Ryan? I mean, are you Rick Classic or are you today's Rick?
You know, Rick Classic doesn't have the experience that today's Rick has. But I think today's Rick, it toes this line between intense, like just massive hubris and trauma, and finding the right level of self-confidence, but also, you know, having that tempered with, you know, he needs that to be kind of tempered with his own experiences and knowing that you know, the smallest little thing can lead to utter failure. I think he needs that tempered and he needs to find the right balance. So kind of today's Rick, when he has that, which I think he did towards the end of last season, that's a great Rick to have. But he's always on that line of just hubris, and that being his downfall. So, you know, again, I think it's hard to say which one I would take, only because like the early Rick, season one Rick, doesn't have the experience that this Rick has and hasn't been through it. But sometimes it feels like Rick doesn't always learn from his experiences.
I mean, yeah, he was at the height of Rickdom at, you know, the season six finale where we can do anything, we can accomplish everything, we'll win this together. And then he meets Negan and he gets knocked down a peg. I don't ever agree with this whole looking at people at different periods of their lives and saying this was the best version of this guy or this was the best version of that person, only because experiences change you, and most of the time they need to. That's why they do change you. I mean, you can't go through the things that we go through on a daily basis and not be affected. I mean, we're not robots. You know, emotionally, we're impacted by everything that we encounter, and every tragedy or every victory that we go through somehow, you know, crafts or molds who we are a little bit. So I think Rick is where Rick needs to be at this point in the story. I don't want Rick to see his friends battered to death with a baseball bat and then just shrug it off and continue continue on the down the path of we can do anything, we can prevail. You need to be affected by this stuff. You need to understand the gravity of the situation. Hi, Morales. Bye, Morales. Daryl puts an abrupt end to the season one story callback via crossbow bolt. Ryan, did it look like Rick had a shot of talking his old friend down off the Negan ledge? Or was this whole thing just a story plot line to craft and further push the Rick to the what have I become question?
I don't know. Honestly, I was kind of found myself trying to figure that out myself. Like, what was the point of that? Because it ended so quickly. You know, as a character, you know, we haven't seen for years. They brought him back, and I thought maybe it was to bring him, you know, maybe a little closer to old Rick and to his humanity, and that they could have some kind of share some moment. It seemed momentarily that maybe he was wavering, but I think you know Daryl did the right thing. You know, in this situation, and. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the purpose is because there wasn't enough substance there for it to really be a what have I become moment. I felt more like this was, I kind of felt like it was like exposition-y, that whole scene. Like there was a lot of stuff that, you know, just didn't, like would a conversation really go like that between, you know, two people in that situation? I didn't buy it completely. And yeah, I'm not quite sure what the purpose of it was except to have like a, you know, a cool little callback to season one and have a character come back, but then they just kill him off. So it didn't seem, you know, I don't see where they were going with it.
Yeah, I know that they were trying to go at this breakneck pace. I think Gimple said that it was going to be mind-melting or face-melting first four episodes. So they're trying to push as much content as possible, as much action, as much suspense as they can. I thought this was extremely rushed. If you were going to do this, I mean, have them take Morales hostage and have them talk to Rick about these type of things over a couple episodes. I wanted something more. I understand that they're paying lip service to the fans by bringing him back because that was one of the big unanswered questions. They didn't want to do a Sopranos to us. What happened to Morales and his family? Even though I think that there was unused footage of him and his family being killed or, you know, a callback to them being killed. I wanted more out of this. And that was my biggest disappointment for the episode was I really wanted to get into this because I really didn't understand. Rick and his group didn't push Morales' family out. They left willingly. They were going to go find their kinfolk and, you know, live happily ever after. So I don't understand the anger that it was aimed at Rick by him. IG, did you understand any of that?
No, I didn't. I didn't understand it at all. But, you know, that being said, I'm not angry that Morales left so quickly because I wasn't that angry when he left last time. And I thought it was, like you said, fan service to bring him back, but I didn't want him to elongate his story. Quite honestly, he wasn't as interesting as people may have thought the first time around. So let's, you know, the end befitted him. I love the character, okay? I love the actor. He's a great person, but he didn't serve any purpose, right? There was no gravity to him being there. Just because he's a savior and he knew Rick from before doesn't make it gravity. Like if that had been Simon standing there holding Rick hostage, there's gravity involved. But just somebody that it could have been any savior and it would have had the same amount of gravity in the situation because it's nobody. And Morales at this point is nobody.
Well, that's got to kill you, though, right, Ryan? I mean, you get the call back to this show that just has become a phenomenon because I really haven't seen him do too much after he's been off the show. I know he's had some small bit parts and whatever, but he was even, you know, asking to come back. So, you know, hinting at it in social media. And so he finally gets the call back up to the major leagues and he sees the script and it's probably about, you know, a page worth of dialogue and Daryl Crossbow. I mean, how shitty must that feel, right?
I mean, the only thing I can think is they don't actually show him dying, so maybe he comes back, which would be even worse. But yeah, it's got to be a shitty feeling to come back to that. And what's essentially like they don't even really do his character justice. He's just there for some exposition and a little bit of tension and fan service, and then he's out. So it's not like they really gave him much. I mean, he did a great job with what he had, but they kind of did him dirty with how they wrote him into and back out of the show.
I know who it was, and it didn't matter one bit. First off, IG, how long was Daryl standing in the background listening to this? And maybe Morales should have been pointing his morality pistol at good old Daryl rather than Rick. I mean, what did you think of the whole no fucks given Dixon in that moment?
Jesus Christ. I mean, he is seeing his Easy Street suite hanging out there. Just I think it really got into his mind because he had some fucks and they're all gone. He had to have been standing there for quite a while. Do you think he was like picking his teeth with a crossbow bolt or something? Just, you know, biding his time. I need there to be a better dramatic moment for me to whack this guy. What is going on with Daryl? And the thing is do we need to get him back to Carol? And I mean, Toot Sweet, so that maybe he can get some humanity back in him. I can only see this leading into a bad thing. Maybe even trying to potentially take out somebody from our own side, from the good guys, because they get in his way. Because it seems like if you're in Daryl's way of killing Negan or even Dwight at this point, you might have to go too.
I think it makes sense. That they kind of drove him there with him being a prisoner and with what he witnessed. So it's necessary. I think, again, this is part of the kind of, this is the war. And so there are things that are going to be acceptable during the war that wouldn't be acceptable on normal, normal terms. And, I think they realize that the saviors are ruthless and will stop at nothing. And, so I don't fault him. I think he's doing what he has to do. It sucks. Morally, there are issues with it, I guess. But at the end of the day, they've got to win this war. It's literally life and death for them, and we'll determine the future of many people, and whether it's a bleak one or a horrifically bleak one. So I think he had to do it.
I don't know, Ryan. I think he's maybe one or two steps away from having a necklace made out of ears.
Which, hey,
so like saying this is the Daryl we need at this point. I think we're getting a little past the Daryl we need. We need to come back a little bit.
When we get to the point where he's killing, like, Alexandrians or members of the kingdom because they disagree with him, then I would say he's gone too far. But, he's killing saviors. I get it. I think there's it's not,
I'm not saying he needs to go slope. Full Jesus with it or anything, but yeah. Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
You don't even listen to the guy. You just whack. Let's go. Yeah, I know who he was.
Well, at the end of the day, who's to say that if he does show himself that Morales doesn't shoot him, obviously he makes maybe a worse moral decision later on, but I think at this stage I'd rather have this guy killing saviors than somebody who's gonna think twice about it.
It's war. I mean, in a kill or be killed situation, I would rather see everybody operate under the same rules, as awful and as inhumane as that sounds. But if I think I'm going to lower my gun and you're going to shoot me, then I'm forced to shoot you. There is no apology. There is no walking away from it. There is no, oh, Jesus, I should have held my gun on that guy. Once you make that mistake in a life or death situation, it's just over for you. You don't get to repeat it. Like Daffy Duck said, it's a great trick, but I can only do it once. You've got to react in the way that Daryl has to react in that situation. I mean, how does he know that if he doesn't wait another 30 seconds and let this play out that Morales just isn't going to shoot Rick? I'm not going to let one of you guys get shot just to give this guy that I barely know the benefit of the doubt. Ryan, I've been trying to figure out what's different about you. Jared points out the fact that Morgan is a grown man in young boy's armor. And why the hell are you wearing that? It didn't do him any good. How do you handle a person like Jared in real life? I mean, the guy completely needs to be punched in the throat. What would you do if you were Morgan?
Again, I guess it's going to stay along the lines of my along lines of how I felt about Daryl. I think Morgan totally should have killed him. And I was the whole time I'm like, come on, just kill him. He deserves it. Especially given, what Morgan, witnessed at his hands. So, in that situation, I think Morgan would have been fine doing anything to him, and I actually was surprised by the kind of restraint that he'd shown, especially at the point where he was kind of antagonizing him and mocking him. So I think Morgan would have been okay to kill him.
I think we need to revote on our Ryan the resident nice guy here, because he seems to want to kill everybody lately.
Well, that's why we do these tapings late at night. He's already rode the subway. He's already dealt with like unreasonable clients that want to eat cake and lose weight. You know, at this point, he's ready to punch everybody in the throat. So it works out. He's just ready to go. It's like, screw it all. By the time he gets home and takes off his trainer pants. Who knew it, IG? But apparently rolling walkers gather no moss. Did you get a giggle out of the King of the Mountain walkers just rolling down the hill towards their prey?
It did. And there's this thing out there that's like done in some places in Europe and has transferred here to the U.S. called cheese rolling, where they chase a big wheel of cheese down a hill. And I swear it looked like they were trying to do that. And they just kept rolling. I mean, did they have somebody building a hill at the bottom that they could just keep rolling down? Holy shit. It was great. And I did enjoy it. It kind of... In an episode that has a lot of feely moments, that gave me a little giggle. I enjoyed it.
Ryan, are you surprised? I mean, we talk about this every week, and I apologize if it's repeat content, but are you surprised that just how much of an amazing job the special effects are on the show? I mean, every single week we get a different looking type of walker with different wounds, and none of them look the same. I mean, if you watch that battle between the all of them look slightly different. The decay is all different in some of them, you know, depending on how long that they've been dead or where they were wounded. I mean, does it surprise you that they're consistently just amazing with their special effects?
Yeah, no, it doesn't surprise me. It's one of the best things about the show is how creative they are. The special effect, the effects themselves don't amaze me so much as the creativity. Like, I think the effects are always great. And, it's a show. I think, you know, there have been a couple of instances of just god awful effects. But for the most part, when it comes to walkers, those effects are almost always brilliantly done. And so I think maybe I almost take for granted how good the effects are on the walkers. I mean, I'm never taken out of it with how they look or how they're eating people or, you know, attacking. Like it's just so well done that it feels real. So I think I maybe take the effects for granted. What I really am always impressed by is how creative they are. Every week it's like, all right, how are they going to up the ante? And, you know, then they do rolling walkers. Like, I'm always shocked at just how creative they are and clever they are with either, you know, either the way that they kill them or the look of the zombies or how the zombies kind of get into battle. It's always kind of interesting. So I think, like I said, the creativity and the kind of how clever they are with them, I think that's what really impresses me.
IG, they get in the battle and lo and behold, the Saviors, they go running. I mean, did it surprise you at all that Jared led the break and, you know, Morgan's reaction to them taking off like that?
I think they were just watching for an opportunity to try and escape. I mean, in really any good POW, that's what you're supposed to do anyway. You're supposed to try and escape. But, you know, I really expected Morgan to act more swiftly, because I think he was in range of them very easily, much sooner than he should have been or needed to be before he started taking them out. And as a result, he only got to take out one. You know, I wanted him to take out six or seven of them before Jesus could stop him. And that was where my disappointment was. And I know, well, here's the thing. I'm not the resident nice guy, so I can have him kill all the people I want. All right.
The thing that bothered me, and I know that we're building up to a huge, like, awful demise for Jared, like something truly terrible is going to happen to this guy. But the one he does shoot isn't Jared. And by the way, my good friend William Bell, I'm friends with him on Facebook. He's a fantastic guy, great actor. He's the anchor of that, the Running Savior chain. Yeah, very interesting guy. Good follow. Find him on Facebook. He's a great actor. He's been in other movies. Hopefully we'll get a chance to interview him in the future. But just a really remarkable guy. There's war, and then there'll be peace. And we're going to have to find a way to live with these people once this war is over. Ryan, does Paul's long-term mindset make it slightly more sense now when it's put in this context? I mean, is his need not to execute these guys more about saving the future?
It does make sense. It seems, not convoluted, but it just doesn't seem, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't, you know, they wouldn't give them the same, you know, they wouldn't offer the same kind of mercy. And I don't see it. I just don't see it working that way. So I think it makes sense. And maybe that's what he needs to say to kind of rationalize, you know, for himself. You know, and I get it, but I just don't think it works in this setting. And I think that Morgan, you know, is in the right, and Morgan and Tara are in the right here, and that, you know, it's not worth it. And again, it's not worth the strain that it's going to put on their community and on their own armies as they are going to battle.
I don't know. To me, it seems like, okay, we can't kill all of the Nazi high command because we have to live with them afterwards. Except, you know, we kind of can because they're Nazis. You know what I'm saying? You know, these saviors are kind of like that. You know, I mean, especially the one that just keeps goading Morgan. Why would we let that guy live? I mean, if he's going to just publicly and out front and everybody loudly goad one of your core members, why would you just... No, he's fine. He can hang out here. We can't kill him. Well, yes, we can. And yes, we should. And that's the part that, you know, I think Jesus is missing, that some of these people, maybe not all of them, but some of them are people that have been instrumental in what the saviors have done. And just like any war, maybe, you know, we don't really have a war criminal tribunal able to be set up here. So maybe some things need to happen on the battlefield where, you know, we don't have the resources to actually try this guy. So let's just kill him here because we already know he did these things. Right. It's not under question whether or not he killed Benjamin. It's not under question how proud he is of it and how much he's goading Morgan about it. Well, can't we at least kill him? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think Jesus has the right idea, but you can't think it about every single person that surrendered there, because some are just surrendering to try and extend their own existence on the planet.
Well, I think that's why anybody surrenders. I mean, you don't surrender because you want to. You surrender because it's surrender or be killed.
No, but some of them might be there just because of circumstance. You know, I can't imagine that everybody that fought for whatever side in either war or any of the wars was there purely by choice, with the exception of any of the more recent wars by the U.S., because we were all volunteered to go in there. But most of the time, if you're fighting for a country, I can't believe every German soldier was a Nazi by choice. Some of them might have just had to go. That it was their time. They were drafted. You have to go. They might not have believed in it. But if you don't do what you're told, then you get killed by your own people. And the same might be true for some of these people that are in with the saviors, is they didn't have a choice. Well, you can easily figure out who those people are as long as they don't try and pull last week's pee pants on you.
Our first victory will allow our second, and our second will deliver our third. IG, two very decisive victories right in a row. Are the King's men lucky? Or are they just that good? Because if you're lucky, luck runs out, right?
They are lucky. They are good, but they are lucky because they aren't running up against a force sizable enough. Now, I think when they first went in and attacked, the first place they went, I think that was skill. A little bit of luck, but it was still like a fully functional outpost for the saviors. Everything is fine there. But I think that they have radios, right? So the news travels fast. Radio outruns anything you got. So I think, you know, they know they're happening, so they're sending out small patrols just so they can update where everything is at. And it's not like they're shooting them with bows and arrows. They're shooting them with rifles. Rifles make noise. You can track the noise. So you know how close they're getting based on those things. So, yeah, the luck, I think, is very quickly going to run out.
From the Kingdom battle to Rick and Daryl's firefight to the parkour versus staff, Morgan versus Jesus throwdown, Ryan, are you enjoying the cut-to-cut action that they've chose to give us this season? And did I hear you groan from halfway across the country when Rick decided to shoot that fire extinguisher and it actually worked?
Yeah, that was. I do like the kind of cut-to-cut action. I think it's done well. I like scenes to play out. I just don't like within a scene a lot of quick cuts where you don't see what's going on. Like, I think I want to see the action. I want to know kind of where things are in space. So, you know, I don't mind the cut-to-cut action. I liked I liked the individual components. There are other issues surrounding them that I didn't like. And of course, yeah, Rick shooting the fire extinguisher and that working was kind of silly. I wish that they would come up with better ways to get out of situations, because they kind of write themselves into a corner, which is great because it was a lot of tension and you're kind of worried at this point. You know, I didn't think Daryl was going to die, but you're a little bit worried. But shoot the fire extinguisher was kind of silly, and I wish they could kind of, you know, you know, that they can write themselves in that corner. Like, come on, you can write a better way out of that, you know. But otherwise, you know, I think the scenes worked well, and definitely had a, you know, really good amount of tension and played out pretty well outside of, you know, fire extinguisher.
IG, was the Morgan versus Jesus showdown everything you hope when they teased it last week? And did The Walking Dead just prove John Turturro right from The Big Lebowski? You indeed don't fuck with the Jesus.
It does seem like you don't fuck with the Jesus, but, you know, something that strikes me here, having seen everything that Morgan went through to master the staff the way he has, I'm wondering if this is Morgan actually trying to go at Jesus, because I know he's more skilled than he showed with the staff, and yet it seems like Jesus is very easily handling his business, and I don't think that would necessarily be the case. Because if we've watched in seasons past the kind of skill and things that Morgan has done, it doesn't seem like he's lost any steps, and yet he's not making those same steps at Jesus. So it was a neat showdown, but I think it's either written so that it could be more close to a stalemate with Jesus finally coming out on top than it would have been if we'd have combined it with what Morgan was. And that's where I had my suspension of disbelief got caught up for a moment, because I'm like, there's no way Jesus should be able to stand up to Morgan, not with the amount of stuff Morgan went through to be able to carry this stick around.
I'm not right. I know I'm not right, but that doesn't make me wrong. Ryan, with Morgan's hair trigger crazy switch, do you think maybe he should follow Carol's lead and maybe not be around people? Because conflict seems to trigger it.
He's one of their most important kind of warriors. So I don't think he shouldn't retreat into his own, you know, into, you know, some secluded place where he can kind of be by himself. I think he's necessary. And, you know, it's almost like the Hulk, you know, or, you know, where he, you know, when he's angry, he can't control himself, but they kind of need him to be angry. That being said, what I don't like is they're kind of rehashing. We're going through the same stuff with Morgan, which makes me a little worried for, you know, him in the long run on this show, because it seems like they maybe don't know where to go with him. Like, the writing seems to be very similar to what it's, you know, what it's been in the past with Morgan, and not being able to kind of control himself and shifting between, you know, just Terminator and not. And so I'm a little worried that the writing for him is kind of getting stale and redundant. And does that mean that they just don't have anything, and that makes him, because he is an A-level character, make him kind of expendable and somebody whose death would really have weight and mean something? So I think I'm a little concerned that they're kind of rehashing this aspect of Morgan's character.
I don't know. I that's the thing, is we did all this. Ryan's absolutely right. We did all this. Why are we doing it again? He came through this already. Going the way of Carol and being away from people, I don't think is anywhere near the right answer. At least I hope not. Mostly because I love Morgan. I think he's an amazing character. But I like Morgan more when he's not needing to clear. You know what I mean? When he was, I have to clear Morgan in a couple of seasons ago. I just... He brings, you know, the humanity back to the show in a different way than Jesus does. And it's a way that I really enjoy. And I hope they don't kill him off. I mean, Lenny James is amazing anyway. I mean, if you haven't watched Snatch, go watch that, because it's one of his best performances ever. But this is right up there with everything else. I don't know. I can't say enough good things about him. And it just does seem like Ryan said, like they're trying to find a way to write him off and make the character's death mean something, but it seems messy, and I'm not in love with the way they're doing it.
Yeah, when he wasn't around the killing and the violence, Morgan was doing fine, but we also saw when Rick re-encountered him again when they went back to their hometown that Morgan doesn't do well when he's on his own, especially when he's put in situations where he has to end people's lives. You know, he really goes off the deep end. So I think he does need to be around people to ground himself so he doesn't kind of float off into crazy land. You know, this is a rough one. I understand that they're kind of it's a callback to the character traits that, he, you know, if you're mentally ill or if you've got, you know, some post-traumatic stress going on, it's not just going to go away. You know, you could deal with it. You could, you know, you could get treatment for it. I mean, over time, maybe some of it kind of wears off a little bit. But if you're re-put back in that situation, is it going to kick back in? It very well might. And I think that's what's happening to Morgan. So I don't know if they're end arounding back to where, you know, I don't know if it's lazy writing or they're just trying to show that this guy still isn't completely whole inside. But one thing I think is I don't like Morgan's chances if he does go off on his own, especially if he catches the saviors that just ran off. I mean, IG, did we lose a whole pack of saviors there? Because as they were all running together, did it not remind you of "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou"? I mean, I was just saying lines as they were running off all chained together, like, "Do not seek the treasure." And I thought you was a toad.
I seen him first. I think they caught them all. I think that there was just the one train that left, but it did certainly look like that. They just needed to duck behind some weeds. And I often wonder, because I see things just like that when you do, and I often wonder if the showrunners do that on purpose to get nerds like us to laugh along momentarily, because it looked exactly like that, except instead of three dudes running, it was 10.
Like a dog, Ryan, you drop two towns over, or a kid you intentionally lose at the mall, Gregory crawls back to Hilltop with his tail between his legs. But was his logic sound, at least, I mean, in his own mind? Is Maggie's mind clouded by vengeance? And was he trying to do the right thing, at least in his perspective?
I guess, and even, you know, the worst villain in their own mind might think that they're doing, you know, doing the right thing. But I, you know, he's not redeemable, you know, after leaving Gregory and everything he's done thus far. Like, there's nothing about him that makes me think that he's changed one bit. And that if he had, you know, if there's an opening to kind of retake his own power or his status on the Hilltop, that he wouldn't take it. So I think nothing about him is redeemable. And, you know, yeah, the logic, it sounds nice, but I don't believe it. And I think he's an opportunist, and he's going to do, you know, he'll do whatever is in his best interest. And, you know, I don't think that changed at any point. And even now, he's just saying what he has to say to stay alive a little bit longer. So, yeah, I think he's irredeemable. And, you know, I can't wait. I hope that he has just a great, awesome death, because he really deserves it.
He deserves an awesome death. I kind of think he deserves kind of a shitty one off screen. Yeah, even
like a shitty one. Awesome for us. Shitty for him.
Well, let me say this. First off, I'm a Gregory fan, not of the character, but the actor that portrays him. Xander Berkeley is a home run every single time he's on the screen. That back and forth with Maggie at the gate, him going back and forth with Cal, even them bringing up the fact that he might have ate a little girl's pancakes. The guy is hilarious. Now, if you look past how big of a douchebag the character is, and just look at the acting for a second, a quick callback to Walker Stalker. I kind of expected, especially from his tweets, for him to be a little standoffish or, you know, hard to deal with, or just one of those people that was kind of just going there to make a little bit of extra money. I was watching him interact with fans, and he couldn't have been nicer. He couldn't have been more into it. He couldn't have been more friendly. I mean, sometimes people need to look past the role and even just enjoy the role that they're, you know, the guy's portraying. He's this, you know, thinks he's better than everybody else. I'm going to sit in an office behind a desk and kind of call people by the wrong names. He's hilarious, you know, and if you take it in the spirit of for what it's worth, I mean, I know I'm expecting a lot. I mean, people are still sending death threats to Josh McDermott. It's a character. They wrote lines for him. They make them do things. I mean, you know, stop with all this nonsense. But Xander Berkeley is a home run every single time he's on the screen. He just cracks me up. After Maggie relents and lets him back in, Gregory completely flips the script and says, "I understand. This is what we need to do. I'm, you know, Team Hilltop. Negan needs to go down." I mean, IG, do you think he really meant it, or was this more self-preservation? And what does it say about Maggie that she let him back in?
I think more than self-preservation, it's he wants to be back in his house. He's used to living there and living in a certain style and living in a certain level of luxury. And he sees that that's gone if he doesn't get back into the Hilltop. And I can't imagine that they're going to let him go back into the house, so they're not going to stick him in some trailer out back. But he probably thinks he is. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's all self-preservation, though. Just like you said, I don't think he has any thought of trying to actually go and fight the Saviors, especially not Negan. He's got a huge fear of Simon, at least, right? Simon has got him just right by the short and curlies. There's no way he's going to stand up to Simon for any length of time. So, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right where Xander Berkeley is an amazing actor, and he is hilarious in this show. But the character that they've written is definitely deserving of a very gruesome death.
Rick and company clean up after the battle and tend to the wounded. Ryan, however, they still have Rick walking around with his Polaroid camera taking pictures. I mean, was this suited to be a one-time sight gag? Was it better suited for that? And do you believe it's slightly below Rick as a character?
No, I don't think it's below him. I think, I don't know what he intends on accomplishing. I think it made more sense, you know, getting Negan, you know, kind of in a compromising situation, kind of cowering. But I think, you know, it's a situation where he's using their own weapons against them. And, I think it will come, you know, it will come to play at some point. Yeah, I don't see it as an issue. It didn't take me out of it. It doesn't bother me that he's doing it. And again, I think he's using one of Negan's own weapons against him, and you know, hopefully it does pay off. But yeah, I didn't see anything wrong with it.
You know, the story's out, IG. I mean, it was no great surprise. Eric dies. He becomes a walker, wanders off to the great zombie rave in the sky. But what did you think of our new friend Russ's acting? I mean, did it make you tear up? This show gets deadpan for the acting, but I really thought Russ brought it in the scene. What did you think?
He brought it hard. And that's the thing, is that's what Ross is absolutely capable of. And that's, and it's not just him. There are other characters in this show that are able to do it. I mean, sometimes I think Rick especially and Daryl are a little bit overacting sometimes when they do some of these things. But the end of the episode with Aaron and Ross Marquand was amazing. He sold it. I could feel the heartbreak. I could sense it with him. I really had empathy for what was going on, and that was all Ross. I can't say enough positive things about it. It really did give the feels.
Yeah, I agree. I think that scene definitely, you know, definitely got what it intended to get, you know, as far as, you know, getting emotion out of it. And, you know, for the most part, I think this episode did well. The actors did great this episode. And I think they really did a good job of getting the emotions that they wanted to get out of you. So I really think, across the board, it was really good in that way.
So a sniper tries to take out Rick and Daryl, and Rick tries to talk this guy down because he still posts Morales effects of, you know, hey, I'm still a good guy. I would try to talk to you before shooting you. But, and he lets them know that there's a herd on their way. Just saying. Ryan, was it more troubling to you that Daryl went rogue yet again? He just flipped the complete Terminator mode? Or the fact that Rick still may have a rat in his mitts? I mean, they show up a day too late for the guns. Gregory might have mumbled something about Negan knew that they were coming. I mean, is someone selling out Team Rick?
Yeah, I think there's got it. There's still got to be a mole somewhere to answer the second question. I think that'll, you know, I don't know who it is. It'd be interesting to see, you know, who it's revealed as. But I think there certainly is a mole somewhere. Now, as far as Daryl, yeah, I think this is the harder moral decision. Once Rick kind of promised that he would, you know, he would let the guy go, I think that was tough, but not unexpected. And again, probably, you know, the right thing to do. He did shoot at them, you know, so, you know, I don't know. I think this is a harder one to justify morally for Daryl, but. And maybe he's going down a little bit down the wrong path, but again, he killed a savior. So as long as he's killing saviors, for now, I'm okay with it.
Well, as internet darling, Daniel Newman side eye in the king, he starts to kind of get the feels a little bit. And he says, listen, it's we or they, one or the other. It cannot be. And just then they find the guns, the 50 cal opens up and they all rush to save the king. IG, your thoughts on the episode, the cliffhanger, and your rating.
Well, I liked the episode better than last week, but only just a little bit. I still think that basically they showed nothing, like nothing important happened. The biggest thing that happened in this episode was Eric died. Now, while that gave me more love for Ross Marquand's Aaron character, it didn't really do anything else. Nothing else of substance happened. I mean, Morales dying, we didn't care that he was there in the first place, or at least I didn't. It didn't mean anything to me because he didn't mean anything to me when he left the first time. I did enjoy, there was a lot of things that were fun to watch, but they weren't serving any purpose. Like, we brought the saviors to the hilltop. Great. Now what? So I liked the episode better than last week, but it was basically last week's episode further down the line. Now, the kingdom coming under attack from those 50 cals, that sets up a huge cliffhanger because they've got a lot of range. They down things very quickly, and I don't know how you get away from that because they're kind of in an open field. So you're in a bad position. So this could go a lot of ways. I hope something works out. And I really hope that the king makes it, Shiva makes it, and most of all, Jerry makes it. Because you know what? Jerry is the heart and soul of the kingdom right now. King Ezekiel is a great motivator. But, you know, with Jerry just kind of being his Flavor Flav right now, I gotta love him. That being said, I'm going to give it a better rating than last week. It was a little more fun, and there was more tears and more empathy going on with this episode. So I'm going to give it a 7. But that being said, I hope we get some actual story coming soon. We need some movement.
The IG just being stingy. Listen, 50 cal versus catcher's gear, advantage 50 cal. Monsters was an action-packed episode for me that set a lot of things in play. I mean, basking in the fact that poor Joey was only the beginning of the Dixon turn to the dark side story arc, the kingdom had a lot of success, but we can debate skill or luck till the cows come home. It looks like, to me, at least by the end of the episode, that their last workplace accident board over at the kingdom is going to be set to 00 starting next week. I was disappointed in the Morales return. I thought that it was too brief. I thought it wasn't explained enough. And they gave us no indication where Rick was headed, but I have a pretty good idea, and it's not going to turn out well. I give Monsters an 8. I can't wait to watch next week. I'm hopefully that I'll be home watching it from my own house rather than a hotel, but I did enjoy the episode quite a bit.
I loved the ending. I love the cliffhanger ending. Unfortunately, there was so much kind of foreshadowing with him saying not one and not one and not one, and sure enough, you know, they mow them down. I love the visual of people immediately without a second thought going to protect the king. I think that's a payoff of a year's worth of learning about him, his character, his society, and what he's built, and the fact that without a moment, without a thought, that multiple people went to save him really speaks to his character and really how great of a motivator and leader that he is. Granted, he got them in a really shitty situation, but still, I think it really was a great payoff. As far as the episode, you know, my issue, again, goes back to what I said last week and the week before, that my fear was there being a lot of filler. And, you know, I think there's somebody out there will be able to edit last week's episode and this week's episode into an hour episode, that would be awesome, because the two of them combined, it did a lot. It told a great story, you know, told a strong story with all the characters that really led them somewhere. But individually, it just felt like a lot of filler and a lot of time where they're just kind of meandering and moping and things that could have just been cut completely. So, you know, while I loved, you know, I think the acting and the performances in the episode were great, I think all the scenes work and worked well, and you know, definitely got the feels in this episode, I, you know, at the end of the day, I think there was still too much filler. And again, if you combine the two episodes, I think you would have gotten a great episode, where instead of getting one great episode, we got two kind of mediocre, you know, potentially great episodes. So I'm going to give this a 7. I want to give it a little bit higher than the 7.5. I think I gave last week's episode a 7, but I just don't think it deserves a 7.5. So I'm giving it a 7. That's my score for this week.
Take us out, IG.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Walking Dead Underground Podcast. I'm Igrahi, and with me have been my co-hosts, Cynic and Ryan. We want to send out a very special thank you to Irony Singleton for being on the show this week. It was a blast having you. Everybody, come back next week. We're going to have more fun, more adventures, more surprises. We love coming to you every week. And like Irony says, share love and happiness with everyone around you. It doesn't cost a thing. In the meantime, send all your comments, questions, and concerns to cynicradio@gmail.com. Head on over to cynicradio.com to find the show. Look for us on Facebook at facebook.com/cynicradio, or go ahead and join the Walking Dead Underground Facebook group. 20,000 strong, we want you to be there too. Finally, you can follow us on Twitter at Cynic Radio. You can also get your very own Walking Dead Underground and Cynic Radio podcast gear. Head on over to tpublic.com and search for Cynic, C-I-N-I-K. And you can get your very own t-shirts, mugs, stickers, all the stuff any fan would want. Please support the show. Head on over there. Pick up stuff. Remember to like, listen, subscribe, share it with all your friends. And until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and at thewalkingdeadunderground.com. Join us in our fight against the saviors.